A public park.
The Internet, 1996 World Exposition, a world fair for the information age.
Molas International presents A Love Affair with Molas by James Nathan Post. In the shops, galleries, and museums of the Americas, the brightly colored patterns and unique style of the Kuna Indian Mola are becoming a more and more familiar sight. The powerful design and workmanship of these hand-stitched reverse applique panels have caught the attention of art-conscious travelers from all over the world. One such traveler visited the islands where molas are created about 20 years ago and has made a lifetime study of their kuna and their art. In 1969, young Nicholas Pancik was sent to the Panama Canal Zone on his last assignment as a U.S. Army officer. During his years of service, he loved to immerse himself in the cultures he encountered and to collect their native artworks. He added the Japanese, Greek, and Spanish languages to his family Polish and his native English. This cosmopolitan experience also taught him to recognize those qualities which distinguish truly unusual native art from that which is merely unfamiliar. One morning, he met a small, strange, gnarled man working in one of the army buildings. He soon found the man was named Daniel and that he was an island chief of the Kuna Indians of the San Blas Archipelago. He spent some time each year working for the Americans to provide his family with things they needed on their primitive islands. One day, Daniel invited Nicholas to come to his home for a visit. Delighted, he took the bush plane flight from the canal zone across the jungles of the Darien, the last place where there is still no road between Alaska and Chile, to El Porvenir, the largest island of the chain. There, he was met by Daniel in his cayuco, a kind of sail-powered dugout canoe. The cayuco might as well have been a time machine. Suddenly, Nicholas, or Nico, as his new friend called him, found himself in a world not too far removed from the Stone Age, where house meant a thatched roof with grass mat sides, and kitchen meant a fire in a rock-ringed hole in the floor. He was immediately impressed by the women. They were such open, laughing, quick-witted people, and they wore some of the most spectacular garments he had ever seen. An experience in color, they were ablaze with all the natural shades of the tropics, the bright red of the hibiscus flower, the yellow of trumpet vine blossoms, the varied shades of blue of sea and sky, the green of hills and trees, the orange and brown of fruits, and the gold of the sun. The pictures were intricate, bold, filled with surreal imagery, and crafted in color patterns which generated a sense of electric motion. In reply to his question about them, Daniel said, "That is a mola," using the Kuna word for women's clothing. "I want to know everything about them," Nicholas told Daniel enthusiastically. And during his many trips to the islands thereafter, he worked to do just that. Molas are, quite simply, Kuna fashion. The women make them as a regular part of their clothing. The front and back panels of their blouses, which they wear with long wrap-around skirts. The designs originated, it is said, with their practice of body painting in bright blue, red, and yellow, as described by pirate historian Lionel Wafer in 1699. When missionaries insisted on clothing, designs similar to the geometric patterns used in body painting were stitched into layers of bright cloth, each layer cut into little windows to reveal the color beneath, a process called reverse appliqué. Many cultures use appliqué techniques, but the Kuna are the people who brought reverse appliqué to the attention of the art world. As he began to appreciate the work of the specially skilled and most inspired Mola makers, he began to burn with a desire to preserve the finest Molas. He also began to notice that many of the newer Molas did not show the same skill. His research revealed that in the 1920s, the Molas had attracted the attention of anthropologists, and museums began to acquire small collections. They were discovered in the 1950s by traders in native handicrafts, who encouraged the Kuna to make crude and cheap Mola-style panels to sell in the souvenir shops. In the 1960s, well-wishing World Social Service organizations brought in sewing machines in an attempt to mechanize the production of such Mola-style products as purses and pillows. By making such tourist pieces, the Kuna could buy modern clothing, electric generators, medicines, and outboard motors. The move was well-intentioned, and the new things much needed. But the cost seemed high to Nicholas. The young women were not taking the time to develop the old skills, and they wouldn't put in the time necessary to create the more elaborate designs. They had begun to turn out rudimentary molas to be traded for mirrors and trinkets. Horrified that this spectacular art form might soon be lost to the manufacturers of cheap mola curios, Nicholas resolved to collect the true old molas. Investing his savings, he spent months traveling to the islands, seeking out the finest pieces. Today, many of the best molas from his collection are in the homes and galleries of other private collectors, and an exhibit is on permanent display in the National Museum of Costa Rica. Now, the Kuna, travelers and collectors alike, have rejected the tourist mola in favor of the cultural expression and artistic quality of the real thing. For the Kuna, this is a reaffirmation of the mola as their personal artistic expression, and as the art reflects their growing awareness of the rest of the world, their molas are becoming more and more expressive and exciting. For the world of art and decoration, this was a recognition that molas are not merely the native handiwork with which they were once associated, but are a much more highly developed form, reflecting a rich and vibrant insight into life.
World Exposition, building a public park for the global village. This has been a production of the Internet Multicasting Service.